Our next argument for today is 21-1532, Apple v. MPH Technologies. Mr. Palmore, please proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the Court. I'm Joseph Palmore here for Apple. This is a consolidated appeal covering a number of issues, but there are some common threads. The Board artificially narrowed broad claim language, set too high a bar for obviousness, and made unsupported findings. I'd like to turn to the first issue, which is the source address question. The Board here committed a claim construction error by concluding that the claim required that a message be sent, quote, directly to a network address for it to qualify as the recited first network address. And I think the issue here is well highlighted by the illustration that's reproduced at page 29 of our brief, because the question comes down to whether network address NA in the prior art is the first network address within the contemplation of independent claim 1 and dependent claim 11.
And there are a couple things that aren't. Mr. Palmer, this is Judge Taranto, and the problem, I think, for you is that Y did not use NA as the address it used to send the message to N. It used NB.
Your Honor, a couple responses to that. The claim language simply says sent to. It uses the passive voice. So the only question is, was the message sent to NA? And MPH's expert agreed that it was sent to NA, 3167 through 3169 is that testimony.
I'm sorry, this is the testimony where he says that N, the intermediate device, receiving it at NB, he equates, I'm not sure that this is right, but anyway, he equates the address with an interface, and doesn't he say that N moves this message from interface at NB to interface at NA? Why does that mean that the message was sent by the mobile computer, which is Y, to NA?
Well, Your Honor, I just wanted to respectfully suggest that the premise isn't correct, because the claim language, the relevant claim language is in claim 1. This is column 22, lines 47 through 49. Says that the intermediate computer is configured to receive from a mobile computer a secure message sent to the first network address. So it uses the passive voice in the sent to. It doesn't require that it be sent to by the mobile computer. It doesn't say that it has to be the destination address, which is a term that's used elsewhere in the patent. It doesn't say that it has to be addressed to this address by the mobile computer. It just, in a passive voice sense, has to be sent to NA. And it's undisputed that this message is sent to NA.
In that view, can you explain to me what Claim 11 adds to Claim 1?
Sure. So Claim 1 requires that there's a separate part of Claim 1 which the Board found was disclosed and is not in dispute here. This is column 22, lines 59 through 62. That requires says that the intermediate computer will securely forward the encrypted data payload to the destination address, use that phrase, using a network address of the intermediate computer. So that's just any network address will suffice. What Claim 11 adds is that the source address has to be the first network address. And what is a first network address? It's an address to which the message is sent.
Here's what I guess I'm puzzling about is how, under your view of the page 29 figure, which is not a patent figure, it wouldn't always be the case that the address that is being used for the second leg would be the same address as the address for the first leg, because if it got to NA, that being the second source address, then it must have been sent there. And then it seems to me it would always be the case that the address being used as the source address on the second transmission out, the transmission out of N, would always, in your view, be the same as one address where it was received.
I don't think that's right, Your Honor, because the elements of Claim 1 that we just talked about contemplate that there could be network addresses that could be used as a source address that did not receive the message. The element that Claim 11 adds is that it has to be a network address that it was sent to, that it transited through. And that's what it adds. So it's not just any network address. It's one that it was sent to, and it's unquestioned here.
So again, using N could use as the source address that it's using in what it is sending out, an address of a location different from the place that the message is being sent out from?
Yes, that's what the patents contemplate. That's the difference between the part of Claim 1 that we were discussing and Claim 11, because Claim 1 talks about using a network address of the intermediate computer as a source address, and what Claim 11 adds is that it has to be the first network address, and a first network address is an address that the message was sent to. And so it's not just any other address on the computer. It has to be one that it was sent to. And here it's undisputed on the fact that it is sent to NA. It's sent, yes, indirectly. And that was a claim construction that the court imposed on the claim language. It's simply not there, and it's not supported by the intrinsic record. If there are no other questions on issue one, I'd like to shift to issue two, if I could. The board, this is the partition fields issue. The board made a straightforward claim construction error here when it concluded that claim four's use of the plural fields requires more than one field. In a number of cases, this court has applied the rule that after the use of a claim term like plurality, that the plural can include the singular. Now, it is a contextual...
This is just, I'm sorry, somebody else wanted to ask something.
Judge Moore, I was just going to say, I think you stated it correctly just now in oral argument, but you overstated it in your brief. You said can include in oral argument, and I don't have any problem with can include. Each of the cases that say when a plural is used in a claim, it can include a singular if in context there's evidence that that's what is supposed to happen. Like, for example, when one of the cases you cite went on to say one or more afterwards, which clearly indicates the plural was meant to include only one, right? So context really matters. So what is the context in this case? Because there's certainly not a blanket rule that plural always includes singular. That doesn't exist anywhere in our precedent. So what is the context that you think drives the otherwise plural word to include singular?
Sure, Your Honor. I think the context here is that the patent as a whole makes it clear that this partition table serves a purpose, which is mapping, right? And the reason that it has two partitions is to allow information to appear on one side related to the first network connection and on the other side related to the second network connection. That's all that the significance that the patent provides.
I don't disagree with you that the patent doesn't explain why you would necessarily benefit from or need more than one field, but its disclosures do have more than one field. Figure 3, for example, shows that when you're looking to the embodiment with information fields, there are multiple fields. So there are no embodiments in this patent that have articulate only, for example, a single field and purport to be the invention. I agree there is no articulation of why it would be important to have more than one information field, more than one of them, but that's not usually what is required in order for us to give weight or meaning to claim limitations, is it? I mean, is there some requirement that I'm not aware of that the spec must justify or explain the necessity of every claim limitation a patentee adopts?
No, Your Honor, but I think that in light of the patent drafter's choice not to use plurality, it does raise the question of whether there was significance attributed to the use of the simple plural, which the board seemed to apply.
I'm sorry, I don't understand. When you say the patent drafter's choice not to use plurality, they did use plurality. They said fields. So what? I don't understand.
No, but they didn't use the word plurality. which this court has said is...
Have to include the word plurality in their opinion in order for otherwise plural words to be given plural meanings?
Well, that's the way to lock it up and make it absolutely clear. And absent that, then it becomes a contextual inquiry. And I would like to point you, Your Honor, to, because I agree that the specification is important. So this is Appendix 151, Column 17. There's a passage here talking about the mapping table, right, in Figure 6. This starts at line 31. And it says Figure 6 is simply one method. And it describes it. And then at line 45, it says other methods of determining the security gateway to be used may be employed. And then continuing on at 49 to 50, the specification says the exact details are not relevant to the invention. So the invention doesn't turn, there's no inventiveness that's disclosed in this patent in terms of the actual kind of structure of this table, or much less the number of fields that would apply. So the context indicates that it serves a purpose, but it doesn't suggest that there's significance to the number of fields. And of course, there's a second argument that we have here, which is that even if the claim...
Is your argument then that if the patent doesn't explain the significance of any given claim element, then we can just railroad over that and not really proceed with the understanding that it's actually a limitation?
No, Your Honor. I mean, I think what this court's cases teach is that when a plural word is used in a claim term, that's the beginning, not the end of the inquiry. And then you have to kind of roll up your sleeves and look at the patent specification and determine whether there is an indication that that use of the plural was intentional or was something inventive that patent actually intends to claim.
No, but counsel, the problem with the way you're articulating it is you're assuming that the starting point is that we don't know what a plural word means. But in fact, the starting point is we do. It's plural. Now, in context, if there's evidence that it shouldn't be read as plural, then that's fine. But all you've pointed to is a lack of evidence that the patentee really considered it significant that it be read as plural. That's different from proving there's evidence that it shouldn't be read as plural.
Your Honor, I understand your point, and I just think that under Versa and DACO, they don't really create a presumption one way or the other. It's a neutral inquiry, and it's a plain and ordinary language question. And just like a spreadsheet could have a column for expenses and a column for liabilities,
it is a plain and ordinary meaning, and that's the presumption, right? The presumption is that words in a claim get their plain and ordinary meaning. And when you have a word that's plural, the plain and ordinary meaning of that word is that it involves more than one of those things.
Well, like in the spreadsheet example that we give in our brief that I was just articulating, I think no one would suggest that if that spreadsheet has only one entry for an expense, that was somehow not a spreadsheet, even though that column was for expenses. In any event, there's a backup argument here, of course, which is that it would have been obvious.
You're out of time for your main argument, but I really wanted you to touch upon what I'll call your third argument. Let's get away from information fields and move
sure.
to the unique identity argument. I wanted to hear you address that, please.
Yes, I'd be happy to. The board on that issue erred by failing to recognize that the prior art use of tunneling, in which an entirely new outside header is placed on a message, replaces that message's unique identity. And so I think it's critical to focus on the entire phrase, substitute the unique identity with another unique identity. The board focused on substitute, but it lost sight of the unique identity part of the element. Agreeing with Apple's expert, and this is at page 31 of the appendix, it's just a few pages earlier than the discussion with respect to this limitation, the board found that the unique identity is the outer IP packet header. And MPH agrees, it's common ground in this case, that the prior art's tunneling involves, in MPH's words at page 44 of its brief, adding an entirely new outside header. So the old header then becomes encapsulated in the packet, but it's no longer the outside header, and therefore it's no longer any part of the unique identity. So the new outside header is the new unique identity. It has completely replaced the old one. So, and it doesn't matter that the old header is still there in some vestigial form in the inner packet. It's not part of the unique identity anymore. So I think that that's the, there's a basic kind of disconnect in the board's order between its description of what counts as the unique identity under these patents, and the fact that it was uncontested, and this is at page 9 of the appendix, that the prior art disclosed the unique identity as uncontested, that it was the outer headers. There's a disconnect between all of that and the board's conclusion that there was no replacement of the unique identity.
Counsel, this is Judge Moore again. I guess I'm sympathetic to your argument, but my concern is your argument feels to be kind of going head-on against the board's claim construction. I know you framed it as substantial evidence, and on appeal, you suggest you're not appealing claim construction, but this feels like exactly the claim construction argument that the board, in fact, resolved. Help me understand how it's not.
Your Honor, it's not, because the claim construction is of substitute, right? So changing, replacing, or modifying, not merely adding to. We have no quarrel
What was the dispute over the word adding to? It was adding the header, right? This is on page 24 of the board's opinion. Conversely, petitioner argued during the oral hearing that adding the header is the same as replacing the header, because at the end of the day, you have a different header than what you had before, a completely different header. That feels like exactly the same argument you're making to us today.
Well, your argument, your Honor, I think they did quote that, but then they go on in a separate, whole separate part of its order to talk about the argument that we're talking about here, which is, even given that claim construction, was this replacement of the unique identity or was it simply added to? And I think that, that the key, there's a key passage of Appendix 44 that shows where I think the court, where the board got it wrong, where it said that tunneling is adding something to an existing packet. They use that phrase, an existing patent, packet. But that's not the claim language. The claim language is, add, is it merely adding to the unique identity? The old unique identity in the prior art isn't there anymore. It's no part of the unique identity any longer. It's encapsulated. So this isn't simply adding to the unique identity. It has been completely replaced.
Counsel, you've exhausted all your time. I'll restore some rebuttal. Let's hear from Mr. Hahn, please.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. May I proceed?
Please.
May it please the Court, Brian Hahn for appellee and patent owner MPH Technologies. Your Honors, we heard a lot of arguments from Apple today. I think Mr. Palmore said there's a common thread here, and MPH agrees with that statement, and that is that Apple's positions over and over strain the claim language.
Can you get to the specifics, please? Start with the first one, please.
Sure. With respect to the different network address meeting the claimed same network address, I think Your Honor's touched on a key admission by Apple, and this was that the prior art actually has the message sent to, received at, and forwarded from, the prior art receives and forward messages from different network addresses. And if we look at the oral hearing, Apple actually admitted that the packets that are sent from host Y to the server have an address of NB. This is at appendix page 636.
So I took it that Mr. Palmore's point on this is that it really doesn't matter what is in, what address, what destination address, like NB, is in the message being sent from Y to N. All that matters under this passive voice language of the claim is that the message sent from Y ends up at NA.
Yes, Your Honor, I understand that's their argument. But
Why is that wrong as a claim language matter?
If we look at the claim language, I'm on appendix page 153. You know, there are, I think, four elements that are, line up with the address here in claim one. We have the intermediate computer is assigned with this first network address, and then they have the intermediate computer which receives from a mobile computer a message which is sent to the first network address, and later it, you know, forwards the payload from the same network address, right? So you have to be assigned with the address, you have to receive at that address, it has to be sent to that address, and it has to be forwarded from that address.
Right, and I think Mr. Palmer's point, if I understand it right, is that everything you just said is true of NA in a message coming from Y.
We wouldn't agree, Your Honor, that the intermediate computer receives messages from the mobile computer at address NA. It, just like as Apple admitted at the oral argument, they're actually addressed to NB. So intermediate computer doesn't receive those messages at NA. It receives them at NB.
And just remind me, where is the claim language that says that the intermediate computer has to receive it at the address?
Sure. This is
to which it is sent.
Appendix 153, column 22, line 47.
I'm sorry.
I
may be looking at you know, a different TypeScript. So which clause of the claim does that?
This is the third clause of claim 1 of the 494 patent.
The intermediate computer configured to receive from a mobile computer a secure message sent to the first network address?
Correct.
So wasn't N configured to receive from Y a message sent to NA?
No, I think the message was sent to NB, and Apple's counsel admitted this at the oral hearing. The address of the message actually going from the mobile computer to the intermediate computer has an address NB, not NA. So it's not sent to NA, it's not received at NA, it's sent to NB and received from NB, at NB.
Okay, I'm done with this, thank you.
Counsel, can you move on to the fields argument, please?
Absolutely. I guess, first of all, you know, Apple admitted that its, you know, first reference, the RFC 3104, didn't disclose any translation table at all, much less one that had a partition with multiple fields. So it relied on the secondary reference, Grabelsky, and the figure 21. This is at appendix page 1918, which did not disclose two partitions, each with information fields. And I think, as Your Honor's recognized, Apple cited no support from the patents that information fields can be singular, and that's because there's not a single embodiment here in the patents that have a single information field. I think we looked at figure 3. Figure 5 is also plurality of information fields. And even figure 6, which Apple raised in its opening argument, has a plurality of information fields. Apple also raised some case law here, but significant is that Apple actually admitted to the board that it cited no case law at all to support interpreting fields as singular. This was during the hearing at appendix.
Counsel, that's really not a very persuasive argument. Claim construction is a question of law. You're suggesting if Apple didn't cite a case to me that tells me how to construe the law, I can't construe it that way. I can't look to that case. The fact that they didn't cite particular cases isn't relevant, really. It's not very helpful.
Understood, Your Honor, but you know, Apple is, you know, trying to turn this into a claim construction issue, but Apple only actually sought the construction of the term unique identity below and responded to MPH's constructions of mobile computer and substitute. So first of all, this was a fact finding by the court that the prior art didn't have information fields, and I think Apple is trying to secure de novo review on this issue by arguing that it's a claim construction issue, but this is reviewed for substantial evidence. Even the cases that it's citing now for claim construction, like the VersaCorp case, I think Your Honors recognize that what those cases say is that context matters a lot. In the VersaCorp case, the claim construction was on the air channels and whether air channels was plural or singular. I think the court ultimately found that air channels could be singular in that case because there are embodiments with singular and plural air channels, and that's just not the case here because every embodiment has plural information fields. I think we also talked about whether or not the patents ascribe some significance to the plurality of information fields. And if I could direct Your Honor's attention to column 9, this is appendix 147, and lines 4 through 26 discuss the information fields. At around line 12, it says, the translation occurs by identifying the translation table entry by comparing against one partition and mapping into the other. And so if you look at the addresses and SPI values here, when you have that plurality of information fields, then you can take each of those values in one partition and map them into the second partition. It goes on in that paragraph to talk about traffic flowing in both the forward and the opposite direction. And so
I'm sorry. This is Judge Toronto. You can map from one space to another, even if the second space is tiny and tinier than the first space. I don't see why plurality of the first space implies plurality of the second space just because there's a mapping.
Well, if we look at Apple's prior art, figure 21 on appendix page 1918, this is Apple's alleged two-partition table. And if, to take Your Honor's example, you look at one value on the left side, which was Apple's first partition, the network address. If we look into the right side of the table, which they alleged is the two columns of SPI values, there is no address on the right side to map into. So you can't map the address from one side into the address on the other side. So that's what's lacking when you have only a single information field. There isn't enough values on both sides of the table to provide information about the secure connection. And I think this is why Apple's spreadsheet analogy also fails, because the claims say these are information fields related to a secure connection. So there's context there. You do have a plurality of information fields that provide the information about the secure connection. Apple says, well, it's like saying a spreadsheet has a column for expenses and a column for assets, and no one would expect that it's not a spreadsheet just because you identify one expense or one asset. But I think a more applicable analogy would be a spreadsheet that has a column for expenses relating to a business and a column with assets related to the business. I think few people would expect that you have only one expense or one asset for a business. If there's no further questions on this issue, I'd like to turn to the substitute limitation. This is the 494 patent claim 2 and the 362 patent claim 3. As Your Honors noted, the board construed this limitation to mean changing, replacing, or modifying, but not merely adding to. And Apple's prior art's tunneling of a packet clearly involves adding an outer header. If we look at appendix page 1190, this is the RSC 3104 reference. It states, if N is able to find a matching mapping, it tunnels the packet to X according to the tunneling mode in effect. And the Grabowski reference clearly, the secondary reference clearly says that tunneling is adding an outer header. And there's a very good reason that Apple sought a claim construction for this particular claim limitation, and that's because the patents repeatedly disparage the use of adding extra packets to the headers. If I could direct the court's attention to appendix page 145 of columns 5 and 6 of the 494 patent. Column 5, line 33 says, the above method, and this is a prior art method, solves the mobility problem at the cost of adding extra headers to packets. In column 6, line 21 says, to summarize, the known solutions either employ extra tunneling, causing extra packet size overhead, or use separate tunnels. And it goes on. Line 65, it says, in the method of the invention, there is no extra encapsulation overhead as in the prior art methods. So, again, there's a very good reason why MPH sought and received that claim construction, and Apple is absolutely trying to circumvent that claim construction here by saying, well, we're adding an outer header, but adding that is really replacing it. It's really not. I'm happy to address any additional questions
Can I just double check on this unique identity? What I hear from your argument and had taken away from the patent is that the patent is very clear that it is doing something from tunneling. Everybody understands, and indeed I think everybody agrees here, that tunneling takes the previous set of information bits, encapsulates it, puts a new outer header on it. So whatever is going on with the argument about claim construction was that can't be what is being talked about with the substitute, the unique identity, which seems like a very strong point, even if it's the case that the unique identity is nothing but the unique tag, which is the outer header, and that is different between the resulting and the starting message. Just an override of what one would take in the absence of the discussion of tunneling from the simple language, even of the claim construction itself. Have I understood that right?
As I understand it, you're characterizing it.
The new outer header is different from, which is the unique identity or identifier, which is different from the previous one. That's not adding to the previous one, it's replacing it. But that seems to be exactly what tunneling does, which the claim construction was meant to distinguish as because the spec means to distinguish it. Is that the lay of the land for this issue?
Yes, I think that's correct, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Hahn. Hearing no further questions, Mr. Palmore, we'll restore your 3 minutes of rebuttal time.
Thank you, Your Honor. On the first issue, the source address issue, I think it's critical to note that the language does not use destination address. It does not require that the message be addressed to the first network address. All that's required is in the passive sense that it be sent to the network address. And again, it's undisputed that this message in the prior art is sent to NA. Is it sent there indirectly? Yes. But it is sent there nonetheless, and it was the board's erroneous claim construction.
And just to be clear, you would agree or you would resist the notion that not only is it sent indirectly, it's sent by a different sender?
I would disagree with that, Your Honor, because the whole point in the prior art was to get that message into address field A, right? It was an intermediate computer that was doing routing over the internet. So it is sent there by the mobile computer.
Is this kind of your argument? Am I understanding it right? So at my dinner table, I got four kids. And if Billy's on the end and I say, please pass me the potatoes, and he hands them to Bobby, who hands them to Matthew, who hands them to Katie, who hands them to me, they were sent to me by Billy. Now, I didn't receive them by Billy necessarily. I received them directly from Katie, but you think they were nonetheless sent by Billy. Is that your argument?
Exactly. Yes, they were sent to you by Billy. And also important is they were just sent to you in the passive voice sense because you received them. And that's all that the claim language requires.
Well, no, the claim language, that's not all the claim language requires. The claim language requires that it has to be to receive from a mobile computer a secure message sent to the first network address.
Right. The intermediate computer itself has to be configured to receive from a mobile computer.
Right.
But then the next part, which is what we're talking about, is a secure message sent to the first network address. It doesn't say sent to by the mobile computer. I think even if it did, it would be satisfied here, but it doesn't say that. On the second issue, I think the board, contrary to what MPH's counsel said, was clearly doing claim construction. The board said the name of the game is the claim. It said it rejected Apple's argument that, and this is at Appendix 46, that the limitation here refers only to the type, not to the number of fields. And Apple was clear all along that it was making a claim construction argument, and the board rejected that claim construction argument. And just because we didn't ask for claim construction at the outset doesn't mean that that's not what happened here. And as I've mentioned, of course, there's a second argument on fields, which is even if it does require plural, that it would have been obvious to add a second field. There's nothing inventive or remarkable about having multiple fields in a partition in a table. And in fact, the prior art table has multiple fields on one side, and so it would have been unremarkable to add multiple fields on the other. And finally, on the
Mr. Palmore, you heard I gave you extra time. You used all your time. Mr. Hahn used less than all his time. And you don't just go on finally well after the buzzer reached. At least you would have said, if the court would permit it, I'd like to address one more point. But since you didn't, your argument is over.
Thank you, Your Honor.